Welcome to episode 2 of the Geekscape Book Club. I am Christian Blatt, Dr. Blatt, if you will, joined by the one, the only, the Michael Shirley.
What an introduction.
Who, if you're lucky, he can conjure movie spoilers right into your text inbox. And sorry, also Christian. With us, as always, is the one, the only, Kate of the Weird.
Hello.
Kate Cornell. And with us for this installment is our friend Eric Connor. Eric, say hello to the people.
Hello to the people.
The geekscapists out there. Now, the four of us regularly do a show on my YouTube channel called Marvel Movie Talk. And interestingly, we're going to spend most of this next hour talking about a Marvel book. So it's going to feel an awful lot like that show. There's just, you know, one or two people in the chat that won't be here, and it might make this more pleasant. But I'm very excited to talk about a book that I had never read before. That is the idea of the Geekscape Book Club. We're all reading something that we've never read before. This week, I hope people had a chance to read Doctor Strange, The Way of the Weird, which I have an actual physical trade paperback, just like old time. Sorry that I hit my microphone. Very unprofessional. Excited to talk about this. I will give the little bit of background in that I have read a lot of Doctor Strange comics over the years, but Doctor Strange was never a favorite. And my peak Doctor Strange memory was at a point when he was relegated to sharing a monthly book with Cloak and Dagger. They each got half of a book. So they each got 11 pages every month instead of having their own solo books that came out every other month. They're like, well, let's just try and get people to buy one book every month. And I was buying both of them. So it did save me like a dollar.
Was
so
that thank Strange you, Tales?
Well, it was Strange Tales. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought so.
Yeah. Look at this already here in the chat, Larry Potter. I'm not a people, but an alien. Hello, people. Thank you, Larry, for visiting us from wherever you may be. But it has been a very long time since I had read a Doctor Strange story. I will tell you right now, I have not read a Doctor Strange story in this century up until this, within the 21st century. It is probably about 25 years since I'd read one. So I enjoyed reading. Now, I have read other Jason Aaron work, but this was the first time I had visited his take on Stephen Strange. And I really liked the story, and I will talk a little bit more about it. I enjoyed it so much that I went on and read the next arc, which this really doesn't end, this arc. It sets up the next one. And I read the first 12 issues, basically, of this 2015 Doctor Strange because I wanted to see where it was going. And I'll tell you, after the show, I might not even stop. I found this to be an interesting take on Doctor Strange. I thought it was funnier than he usually was in the comics. It's very in line with the MCU sort of approach towards telling these stories. You know, the little dots of humor along the way. And I also loved how much it was so representative of the MCU, not the MCU, but the actual Marvel published universe, because Michael Shirley, whatever you think of this story, you got to see Ilyana Rasputin magic and you got to see Wanda Maximoff, the Scarlet Witch. So no matter what you thought about it, at least you got to visit with a couple of your favorite girls, right?
Yeah, I did like to see sprinkled throughout were a few characters. That was fun.
Yeah, and at some point, Brother Voodoo became Dr. Voodoo, which is fine. I just didn't realize he had gone to Voodoo Medical School, but it was nice to see Voodoo, as it were. But let's just kind of go around and we'll talk big picture. I want to ask you, Michael, I know that you liked the inclusion in there. You had a problem. We've talked a little bit about it. You had the same problem with this story that I did. You couldn't get past it. But what did you think? Let's start with the writing overall, the storytelling, this tale of Doctor Strange, this strange tale, if you will.
I enjoyed this story more as it went on. I'll say that. And by the end of it, I did think for a second, and I was on the very last page, and I was like, what is that? I was like, maybe. And then I was like, no, I'm not going to do number 6. But I liked this story pretty well. I have a lot of problem with the art, which I'm sure we'll go into later. But the thing, I guess, I felt a little bit of a disconnect between the typical Doctor Strange you read in the comic books, the way he like is and acts, and the way he is in the MCU, and then we have this kind of version.
Right.
It's just a little bit more self-indulgent, or I kind of feel like it's like a weird version of Sex in the City. He's just like explaining everything to me, and I kind of hate that out of a narrator. That's one of my big problems with Dexter, my main problem with Sex in the City, like any of these shows. Like, I hate when a narrator kind of makes me feel like I'm so dumb they have to like tell me every last detail.
And but, just like that, all the magic was gone.
Yeah.
But I'm glad you laughed at that.
But with the way that there are so many.
Oh, is that like a Sex in the City reference? Okay.
It's a then just like that reference. It's a deeper track.
It works on two levels.
And just like that comes at
And just like that, Michael got interrupted.
No, that's totally fine. But I think that was probably the best way I can sum it all up. I think with the way he uses words and all these places we don't know and all these like relics we don't know,
yeah,
it kind of leans in more to being a little more vocal as a narrator. So I thought they kind of got away with it. But typically, I don't love that story.
Right. No, I do understand what you're saying. And I think this book consistently seems that it's narrated by Steven. So I think it works. What I am always jarred by is when a standalone issue, for some reason, is narrated by a character that's happened in like X-Men and play. Like all of a sudden like Wolverine's telling us the story and I'm like, well, this isn't what we usually get, right? You know, so I think one of my favorite X-Men stories is Uncanny X-Men 205, the lone wolf where he's in the snow and he doesn't remember anything. I believe he narrates that, and like that's the one time where it works. Like typically I don't like that device. Kate, what did you think of the story of the Way of the Weird?
So we had a podcast a couple weeks ago and I was with Michael a little bit. I was like, I cannot get this is, and I like convoluted stuff. You know me. I had a lot of trouble getting through the first couple of like 20 or so pages. It was just like, and maybe because like the first few pages started off with that, like the narration was up front, but there was still stuff going on in the back, that like weird, like fuzzy thing that happened where there was still like dialogue that was like faded out, but the narration was more prominent. I don't know.
You didn't know you were going to be watching a story within a story.
Do you mean in the beginning where it was like the flashback?
It was actual panels.
Those were like actual Steve Ditko panels. I actually thought that was a cool vision. I'd never seen that before.
I was like,
Kate was trying to read every word and she couldn't.
That's true. You probably got frustrated.
She's like,
fuck this, fuck. And then he's like above the kid. I'm like, no, there's so much happening. And then he walked into the bar with no doors. And I'm like, all right, I'm back with you now. Thanks. Like, we all need a drink after that.
We all need the bar with no doors. I agree.
We all need the bar with no doors.
I love that. I don't know if it was introduced in this. I'm not that up on Strange. So anybody who would like to tell me in the chat, whether you're watching live or the archive, please let us know. Go ahead.
I can tell you it doesn't stop because it's in the latest issue of Doctor Strange that's been rebooted.
Oh, great.
Legacy 417.
Legacy 417. But is it a new number one? Sorry, Kate. Is that the one that you just sent me?
We'll talk about it later.
Okay.
But it's the new Doctor Strange where Clea is Doctor Strange.
Oh, cool. What were you saying, Kate?
No, I was just about the story. I enjoyed overall this idea that there were certain aspects of Doctor Strange that are kind of a little bit antiquated, and there's a lot of ways to like take magic in a comic book universe, just in a Doctor Strange universe, but that there's this like the way we see the world is normal, but the way he sees the world is different. Like he sees all of these invisible things, and it felt like they were turning magic like what Aaron was doing was he was kind of attacking or reimagining what we think as magic, like that, like we don't think magic will ever run out and that magic is intangible and and like it's something over there. But what he's trying to say in the story is that magic is tangible and it's finite. And this idea that like, if you, the cosmic balance of things with the living tribunal, it's like, they just care that the balance is kept and like what happens when a superhero messes with the balance of things. And then it puts an entire idea or an entire way of dealing with the world at risk. So I liked the kind of high concept that was happening here. And that's how I could get into the convoluted story is when they started bringing in, like when the woman comes in with the demons in her head, that's when I got into it.
Zelda Stanton from the Bronx. Is that who you're referring to? Yes.
Yeah.
I did enjoy, I like any time that they have, you know, your best TV pilots, it's usually somebody's first day on the job. And it's so that we as the viewer can kind of relate to them. So she was sort of like our way into Doctor Strange, which I thought was interesting because
but she didn't come in for a bit. She came hot minute. I was just, until that hot minute came, I'm like, Doctor Strange is doing a lot of explaining. And it's like, it's for me, it was like being on a date where the other guy likes the sound of his own voice more than mine.
Yeah.
And that's really irritating when you're on a date.
I would assume that that's what a date with Stephen Strange would be like.
Women don't like that, Kate.
No, we don't.
No, apparently your wife and my wife are the only two that do. So we lucked
out. Or their hearing is just really gone.
No, just the first date. After the first date and you reel them back in for the second one, for then you can go off on.
Numbed.
To what your point was, Kate, I really like that we got to see these repercussions in a way that it felt like cinematic, where it was just like, we're going to visit for a second with all these other people. Like the couple that found the genie's lamp and they imprisoned all the natives. And then when the magic was gone, well, clearly they got eaten by the natives. My favorite panel in the whole series might be when Aladdin and Jasmine fall off of the magic carpet because there's no magic in it anymore. That might've been that was probably my favorite thing in there because I'm like, yeah, I guess that would happen.
That would happen.
Just the idea that all the magic ran out.
A whole new world.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of magic running out, Eric, what were your thoughts?
Wow.
I know people watching the show, watching and listening to the show don't necessarily know how well we all know each other, but we talk for a lot of hours over on Marvel Movie Talk on the Blackcast YouTube channel. But Eric, what were your thoughts just sort of overall? And I know you sent me some images and we'll scroll through them, but give us a big picture at first.
Real images, nothing.
Oh yeah, just actual grabs from the comic book. I know this isn't his usual Photoshop work.
Not at all. No, I kept it pure. And also, I did read it on my iPad. So I'm, I felt like the young kid here. I'm like, oh my God, I can read comics digitally and just do this. And then I'm confused. How do I zoom in? How do I zoom out? But it was actually pretty cool reading it on Comixology. Because there, like that moment you described, Kate, where she had that thing coming out of her head.
Yeah.
What's kind of awesome is it zooms, it's like starts in and then pulls out to reveal all that creature stuff. And I literally went, whoa. Like, I actually said that out loud. Mm-hmm. And my kids were like, what's going on? And I'm like, stay away from me, you COVID-laden bastards.
Go back in your termite tent, boys.
Yeah, they're about to say, away with you to the netherworld. I really enjoyed this. And I am curious. It's funny. It's like when you read a graphic novel that's a compendium of multiple issues, it is kind of like binging a TV show. So it's like, instead of waiting to see where it goes, because I'm curious if I just went to, you know, the comic store and I grabbed this first issue in the series, I don't know if I would have gotten that second issue. But the fact that it was all kind of bound together, it was like, okay, well, I know it's kind of part of a bigger arc. And I'm so glad, like, I stuck with it and I kept going. And like yourself, Christian, I'm definitely going to keep reading where this story goes because I thought it was like a terrific entry point. I realized even many, many years ago when I collected comics, I didn't read that much Doctor Strange, usually only when he showed up in some other title. And so for me, this may be the first time I actually read like a Doctor Strange comic, like yourself, Christian, since like the 1900s, if you remember those years.
And we're the only two on the show who remember the 1900s. So, you know, we'll tell the rest of them about it later. I'm sorry, what were you going to say, Kate?
No, my question to Eric and anybody is, do you think that that was why it was important for Jason Aaron to put all of the magic users in one place, as opposed to like, they're mostly like supplementary characters, you know, with maybe the exception of Scarlet Witch with House of M, but like, they're all kind of like supplements to a bigger story. And do you think that that was important to be like, no, these cats like hang out and like they are now the central part of the central story that involves how they fight together. Do you think that that was an important factor for the writers? Oh,
yeah. Yeah. Well, I think because you needed a sense of the depth of this thing, like part of it is you introduce characters who like you're going to take away from us too. So the one I was a huge fan of, and I apologize if I'm mispronouncing his name, but Monaco.
Yeah, Monaco.
I did like Monaco. Yeah.
Oh my God,
the
Monaco is
magic.
Yeah, and he's like a $2 drunk. He has a large bar tab. He hates everyone young, and then you find out he was also a Nazi hunter. I'm like, I could sign up for every box of this. Dude.
Yeah.
Well, and also,
I would just
Michael,
get a whole show of him.
Michael, yeah, I feel like what you probably liked about Monaco is the fact that when he went home every night, he felt like he had to drown a rabbit.
Well, there's always a price. And
yeah, I kind of latched onto that because it seemed interesting. But what he said, I mean, it's like, yeah, like using magic all the time. I mean, it's something that's been dealt with Ileana Rasputin, with magic herself, yeah, multiple times. Like, you know, each time she went into limbo, she lost a little bit more of herself, things like that, you know, and to just have this idea that there's the toll and the toll it takes on him, and just like what Wong needs to feed him so that, you know, because he can't eat regular food. I had never considered any of that. I hope in Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, Benedict Cumberbatch has a big bowl of slugs or something, you know, and it's just like, this is what you got to eat, you know?
Yeah, that was probably one of my favorite details of like the havoc it reaps over his body, and that like his body can't like digest real food, and he has to eat like this like cosmic gunk.
It was like vampire kind of thing, you know, where
absolutely,
you know, and I think that's one thing they did really well here. The world building, the rules, you know, that's, and I understand, like, you know, when he over explains things, it could feel a little too Carrie Bradshaw for some of us, but I think it's important. And those kind of details about the food, about a soul for a soul, I thought that was actually really, that was all stuff that's fascinating and quite dramatic. Like, it's not just like, you know, window dressing, but rather it's something that's really kind of important. And it talks about what it means to be strange, what it means to kind of walk in his shoes, live his life. And, you know, and you realize like it's torturous. And that's not something I mean, obviously the first, you know, the birth of Strange came from pain. The first movie wasn't afraid to go there. But the idea that every day for him is torturous. In a way, like Wolverine's.
He loves it, though.
That panel where it's one of the first panels where he's like, I love what I do, or something like that. It's like that first, like, two-sided panel. Like, you could tell he really loves it. And then you get the cost of it right after.
Yeah.
And how much it takes a toll. And I think the whole theme of it was, you know, we think that magic, especially coming out of, I think this was 2015. So this is like after Harry Potter and stuff like that. And this was the idea of like magic can just fix things.
Which, by the way, that's another one of those great moments that without magic, you see poor little Harry Potter sitting there holding a wand that's not going to do anything for him. I was just like, oh man, they really got it. They got everybody, you know.
They got everybody.
The only magic user that was missing was Mumford the Magician from Sesame Street, who would, of course, cast spells with a la peanut butter jelly sandwiches. But I'll allow that not being in there because I think it might have been a step too far. There was a lot of great stuff in here, and just sort of dealing with, you know, there's references to the Ancient One. There you get a little bit more of the Ancient One in the later issues, but I think that, you know, this is a really good entry point for Doctor Strange, because for me, it literally was. It's been so long. Yes, if you've seen the movie, you're going to be able to relate to a lot of it. But if you don't know the character at all, I do agree with this idea that it took a little while to get into.
But I wonder if that's why it did take us a little bit, like, oh, why does it feel like we have to explain it? Because yeah. we'd seen the movie.
That's fair.
But it's like, this is our version. This is for someone who is coming in without the explanation, without the movie, right. without knowing the, like they kind of have to redo it. And maybe it's because we had seen the movie. It's like, oh, why do you have to explain? Like, yeah, you had an accident. I feel bad for you, whatever.
I don't mind the backstory. I dislike the like self-indulgence of like
the actual text. Loves
to hear themselves talk.
So you're talking about Steven in particular.
Yeah. No, all him. Like,
yeah. No, exactly. And I think that's one of those characters that you're going to have to spend that time with.
Like, whereas
like when Peter Parker narrates a story, you're like, oh, I love that guy.
Yeah. You know? He's humble.
Yeah. He's yeah. like, oh yeah, we love him. But like Steven Strange is definitely a dick.
You know? He's like my pain.
To be the Sorcerer Supreme, I guess you have to be a little bit.
Was he too much of a Samantha? Is that what you're saying? And not enough.
I don't know why you're being
so of a Miranda.
I don't know. No, Eric, I don't know why you're being such a Miranda this week. And really, I think you just might have to check yourself for a little bit. Let's go to our resident Mr. Big, Michael. I wanted to know, sort of go into the specifics. Now, you and I have an affinity in the past for, I don't want to say his name wrong, but Chris Bocciolo, maybe, or Bocciolo. So I knew his artwork from Generation X, which, if you ask Michael, is one of the two greatest comic book series of all time, up there with Excalibur. And I don't know, if you look at the credits, there's a team of inkers, and he's not paired up with, I think, anybody who does his artwork justice, because it's not pretty and it's very stylized. I think it looks okay on glossy paper. And I read some later issues on Marvel Unlimited and it looked okay, but I didn't love the artwork. And a lot of times, like, you can hide half-ass storytelling if the artwork is good. And I mean, Image Comics was built on that. And I don't feel like I'm going out on a ledge there on that. But the story was good, but the artwork just stared me in the face. And that's the thing that I think I agreed with Michael the most. Talk a little bit about what it was. Like, as you were going through this book, did you feel like there were moments, or just consistently all the way through these five issues, you were just disappointed by what it looked like?
It just had like this teenage grunge feel to it that I didn't feel like fit with the characters, the story. I loved the coloring and kind of the general artwork of the backside, you know, of Manhattan, the part that everyone else didn't see, the parts that were partly colored, and it had kind of this Beetlejuice flair to it. But seeing, you know, the inside of the sanctum, and it just felt too dark, too gritty, but also like it had this definite like pop feeling that his artwork has. And I just don't think of this as like a bubblegum Jubilee, like Generation Teens, like, you know, like, maybe I'm just so used to seeing that artwork that way that
seeing it this way. I think that the big stuff looked good, like some of the monsters and obviously the drones, the robots, anything like that. I thought it all looked fine. I thought that the human detail definitely left a lot of room.
Yeah, it was like sometimes you didn't have a mouth, it seemed like. It's like, you can't draw everything without making
It's like, it's reminiscent of, you know, all the great artists who've drawn Spider-Man over the years. When there are panels where they don't take the time to draw the webs, the stripes on his costume, and it's just red, that always annoys me. I'm like, come on. I know you got a lot of pictures to draw, but that's not what it looks like.
Even like a little indentation part of it.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
Kate, what do you think about the artwork in this series and the Way of the Weird?
I thought that the bigger panels were better than the more detailed panels. I thought when they had more space to actually let the art speak for itself, they did a lot better. And not necessarily that they could put more detail in because there was bigger space. Sometimes it was bigger and it was just like the gesture of it. I thought they did much better, like, or even in like the mid-range panels, like when Zelma first enters the Sanctorum and the books are all floating. Yes. But his face, but like they took the time to make the books float, and like it looked beautiful in the back, but he just didn't look like the Sorcerer Supreme. Like I couldn't get over, like, sometimes he had that, like, he looked like Doctor Strange, and then sometimes he just like looked like
Ren and Stimpy, right?
The dude at the bar. You know what I mean? But yeah. Like these details are so cool. Like these little monsters are really, really neat, right, versus like people's faces and expressions. And sometimes you need those faces and expressions, especially when you're about to enter something you really need to have a personal vendetta, like a personal connection to, because I don't have magic. So losing magic is not a big deal for me.
Wait a minute. Why are you even on this show if you don't have any magic? I don't even understand. I thought that was
Michael has question. All the magic, oh, Christian. No.
That's fair.
No, there's fair. Enough to go around.
For our audio only listeners, we're sharing some of the images right now. This was one that Eric sent to us. These were basically the head monsters for Zelda Stanton. And there were a few other things that Eric sent, and this is a sort of beautiful.
I hate how gross it is.
It is definitely gross, but I really appreciated this. And then you look at it.
And that's the one it zoomed in. This is the stuff coming out of her head. I'm sorry, but, Christian, go ahead.
No, I read issues 6 to 10 on, as I said, on Marvel Unlimited, so they would zoom in on stuff. So, yeah, I can imagine that this would be really cool as they show that stuff to you. You know, it's funny because I actually took a few notes while I was reading it, and you have a panel for one of the things that I wrote down because it was a joke I really liked, which was, of course you have a bathhouse, look at your mustache. You can get a Freddie Mercury vibe off of Stephen Strange.
That reminded me of Stephen, or Stephen with a V. You know, when he falls off the boat.
You're talking about Stephen Grant.
In Moon Knight. You guys will have to watch our other show to get that inside joke.
And then this idea that he keeps his books in piles because Zelda Stanton's the librarian. And then the fact that
Cinemark.
Showing Doctor Strange. So
last panel. It was like a reference to the Blob, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, like that's a great call.
Because remember the Blob attacked them in a movie? And we're talking the original Blob, although I think they did it in the remake too, with the only Dylan worth his weight in anything, Kevin Dillon. They basically like...
Not a diss to all Dylans, just...
No, I love Matt Dillon. Hold on. Peace and love.
Yeah. And beware the shrubbery. And this was a really cool image, this idea of eating the, you know. So in any case, there were some great visuals. I just thought reading panel by panel, I was just like, oh, man, they could have done so much more.
I had to, like, rest a little bit every once in a while. Like, I had to just, like, put it down and, like, process what I had just, like, seen.
I almost wish they had had another artist do this magical side where it was like, interesting. You know, that I felt like
what, so it really would look this, like
I would have loved this art for the stuff that normal people couldn't see, but I would much rather have had another artist doing the everyday.
That's so like cool, Michael.
The movie Soul had two different composers, one for the jazz and then Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross for the
That's
other
a
world.
Great analogy.
Yeah, I'm feeding off you, Mike. Well, and I got
but not in your head. He's not a monster.
No, he's not a monster. No. Yeah.
But one thing too, I was thinking about, because we're talking about where the art worked and where it kind of maybe left something to be desired. I was thinking, sorry to use another horror metaphor, but like And maybe it's because I'm wearing a Camp Crystal Lake shirt. But in Nightmare on Elm Street, whenever they were doing Freddy Krueger like close-ups, Robert Englund had to be in that makeup chair twice as long. You know, and that's just kind of standard horror makeup and really makeup in general. Like, if you're going to do close-ups, you spend more time. And I felt it's weird because the close-ups is where I did feel like the slugs, the faces. That's the stuff where I'm like, wow, they really didn't put the same kind of detail in there that they did in those wider panels. And that's something that I did notice in the artwork. And it didn't stop me, pardon me, from enjoying this. But it did feel like, especially in something like Doctor Strange, where there's such a unique feel to the whole storytelling, don't sleep on the close-ups, you know, because those are important. And really, I thought even sometimes the coloring there in the close-ups was like a little off. So I was kind of surprised by that. If anything, I thought that to me, for my eyes, needed maybe a bit more, texture, something to it, because it felt a little blocky, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, no, I think that on the whole, even though I didn't love the artwork, it's so far from the worst I've seen. It's just, there were times where I was like, man, I feel like, I don't know, was there too much of a deadline? Well, I don't know what the problem was. I just feel like it could have been a little bit better. And especially seeing it after the fact, I mean, you can go back and you can punch it up a little bit, and who knows, maybe they did, I don't actually know. But on the whole, I think that I would tell somebody, if you want to read Doctor Strange comics, this is a good spot to start.
Listen to this on tape.
What's that?
Listen to this book on tape.
Right. Well, yeah, listen to this book on tape. But I would also, you know, look, if you want to go back to like original Steve Ditko, Doctor Strange, it's tough. There's a lot. And, you know, I think that it's better to start with something more modern. This is a great place to start. You know, there are, as the, you know, once the movie's out, there's going to be probably a lot more articles that will mention, here's your 10 Doctor Strange stories. This will be one of them. So I'll be interested in reading more. Before we spend just a couple minutes on what came after it, I want to ask you first, Eric, would you say for somebody, yeah, this is a good place to start if you want to read Doctor Strange comics? Would you recommend it, is the short question.
Oh, sure. I mean, I think this is a great sort of in unto this world. And, you know, I love those early panels we alluded to, which felt, you know, very self-reflexive, like it's literally putting him over the old artwork. But I thought also emotionally kind of getting to know him. And Michael, you got a good point. He's a little, like at one point I wrote, because I actually did take some notes, like,
oh, cute.
Him and Tony Stark felt like it would have been like some kind of reboot of Tango and Cash, like both smart Alex, you know, like quipping at everything. And I'll, at times I'm like, I don't know if that's quite Stephen Strange's voice. But that all being said, I thought they really did a great job of showing the cost of magic. You know, and I love he had a line there saying he compared himself to an electrician. Like, in essence, he can only grab the things that are there. I really enjoyed it. And I don't remember if this was in the second volume, Christian, but when our buddy Monaco said, like, there is magic out there. You just have to find it.
Yeah, and it's so in the first to, like, one go, because Monaco's gone. After
right.
Yeah, you spoiled that for me.
No, he's just, yeah, maybe he shows up again. We don't know.
He dips.
Yeah, but yeah, like the nooks and crannies, like that kind of world building is fabulous. And, and it was emotional, like having a villain that was so specific. I thought it was great. I think this could be a great Doctor Strange 3 if they ever opt to go this way.
I, you know, you mentioned Tony, and I thought it was funny the way that Steven reacts when Wanda suggested, and we asked Tony, he's like, Tony, you want to get Tony? Tony doesn't know anything about this. You know, like the idea that he couldn't handle it by himself. He's like, yeah, I need a bunch of other magic users to help me out. Let's be honest. I need to basically snort the skeleton of the ancient one. But,
well, it's also the I was reading another thing about Doctor Strange, and it's a core crux of his character that he believes that he gets annoyed when he thinks science can outdo, when people think science can outdo magic.
Sure. Yeah.
So it's the idea that, like, oh, Tony can just invent something. And it's like, no, he can't. He can't beat magic. You can't be mean.
Magic.
Which kind of like came to a head in Infinity War a little bit when the two started fighting. So like, you know.
What about you, Kate? Would you recommend this to someone that is interested in Doctor Strange stories, or would you say like, yeah, check the BuzzFeed list and find something different?
I would recommend this. I would just forewarn them about like it is like a little bit, you have to like, you know, it's like one of those like lawnmowers. You have to like pull it a few times before you like really get going. Yeah. I think what I would also say about this is it's not the Doctor Strange from the films. It's not like he's not the smarmy Benedict Cumberbatch. He's a little bit like there's like a character thing of Doctor Strange that is very apparent in some of these, you know, the layout gets easier to read the further it goes along. Yeah, but in the beginning, it's a little bit like jarring because he's not, you know, Spider-Man. Yeah,
he's more like Rowan Atkinson's Doctor Strange, perhaps. You know, he's a little bit rougher around the edges. What about you, Michael? I know that you had some issues with this early on. Do you think that this is a good Doctor Strange for people looking for Doctor Strange stories, or should they just keep looking elsewhere?
Do I like this person?
What's that?
Do I like this person?
You don't like any people, but if you wanted to give honest advice, would you tell somebody to read this, or would you give it a pass?
Yeah, if I didn't like the person, I'd tell them it was the best like comic book I've ever read. But if it was like, you know, someone I had a slight affinity for, I'd say move on.
Yeah, well, that's why, of course, Michael didn't go on. And Kate, I assume you just read the first five issues of this.
I just read the first five, that's and honestly, fine. I'm probably going to stop there.
Yeah, the reason why I wanted to continue and why I said anybody who wants to, I'm going to, is because it doesn't really end. And the next five issues, The Last Days of Magic, is really like, this is really just a prologue to that. That's the real fight. That's the big thing. And I may have even referenced things that happened in that story that I thought happened in this one. And that's part of the problem, I suppose. But right. I really thought this sort of this conflict of, you know, actually fighting for magic to remain and not succeeding really, and just sort of having to kind of build it back up.
No,
I found that to be really interesting, because when it ends, there is very little magic left in the world. And that idea, I think, makes me so much more interesting to see, like, what if you're the Sorcerer Supreme, but most of the magic is still gone? You have the hope that it's going to come back. And this will be an actual spoiler for a book from like 7 years ago. But Baron Mordo picks a great time to come back in issue 12, because Stephen Strange is not the Stephen Strange that he has been in the past. So he waltzes into the bar with no doors. So that's why I'm very much interested to see that matchup. I think that's another five issue arc. What did you think, Eric, about The Last Days of Magic, what you read of it? Yeah.
Oh, I mean, I.
And what
I
did got your dog halfway think about it, more importantly?
Yeah. Fezzik's trying to understand why Michael's revenge against people he doesn't like just is comic book related. It feels very narrow. There's so many ways to get revenge. I can teach you, Michael. I can teach you a lot. Yeah.
No comment.
I love how the story continued. I mean, I think once it got up and running, I think what's really interesting always is right when you take away the hero's powers. Right, so we've talked before about Storm's plotline from would have been the Uncanny 200 or so.
Well, Uncanny X-Men 185. She gets shot, and her power she loses her powers because they were aiming for Rogue, and Storm got in the way. And yeah, so Uncanny X-Men 186, Chris Claremont, Barry Windsor Smith is a great standalone issue where very little happens. Storm is in bed for most of the issue, depressed. And it's fascinating to think back to having read that as a child. But yeah, the Deep Howard Storm was, I would say, probably the best writing for the character, because you really got to know who she was. This was right after she became Mohawk Storm, aka the best Storm ever. Sure. Michael's nodding his head. So finally, we're
punk in rock Kate, storm.
Kate gave us the devil horns. But anyway, so you referenced depowered Storm in relation to sort of not having powers and sort of that, yeah. You know, and Doctor Strange talking about like, I took for granted how much I loved flying and I can't fly now, you know?
Right. Yeah. Right. And he's like literally climbing the side of a mountain.
That's great.
You know, and I think like that's something that, you know, especially with Doctor Strange, where it's sometimes, I find with like him, Scarlet Witch, sometimes it's really hard to get your head around what exactly are their powers, because yeah. They just seem to pull a million rabbits out of a billion different hats. But I think like when all of a sudden all those hats and rabbits are gone, it suddenly is like Strange becomes really human. And that idea of him scrounging for magic, I think there's also really interesting metaphor here. I mean, it felt like, I don't know, a cautionary tale, something that, you know, I was just dealing with the Burbank Eco Council and something they would appreciate, because it's about the environment. It's about our natural resources. The metaphor's there. It's pretty thinly veiled, but I think it's, I do like the idea that like Doctor Strange is about more than just magic. Like there's something else it's saying here, which I think was particularly like, you know, they leaned hard into it, but I think it was effective. So, yeah, no, I think it is worth continuing on this journey. But I would never be one to tell Michael or Kate how to live their lives.
No. And I can see. I think
Michael and I have better things to do.
Look, I
want to know all about this Burbank like town hall,
the Burbank Eco. Yeah, we'll do a standalone podcast.
Pitchforks and lamps and
tiki torches. You can't forget the tiki torches.
Oh, they all have torches and pitchforks. Every single city council meeting.
It's vegan coffee. As someone who lives in Burbank, I will tell you that it's basically like the town meetings in the film Footloose. We're still not going to allow dancing in Burbank, and personally, that's why I live here. I think that I'll be interested in seeing where the story goes. I'm certainly going to continue at least read it, because you know Baron Mordo. I'm interested in sort of getting Jason Aaron's take on that. And I really enjoyed it in spite of finding the art to be lackluster at times. But in general, I liked it. Now, Michael, I know that you shared something. So this, you told me, you sent me, I guess, the newest incarnation of Doctor Strange. Yeah. So this is something that we can tell people about before we move on to our next topic, but before we turn the page on Doctor Strange, well, because you've never bought a regular copy of
another,
only ever by the very.
Oh, cool!
And so, talk about this is called Strange, right? This is Strange number one.
Yeah.
So, talk about this.
I got this because this variant cover was drawn by my favorite artist, J. Scott Campbell.
Yep.
Who started another one of my favorite Gen 13s, which I feel like at Image, this artwork would have been right at home. That we were reading today would have been great on like a Gen 13 Image comic. But this book is about after Doctor Strange dies in the series, The Death of Doctor Strange, his estranged wife, Clea, comes back to take up the mantle, and Doctor Doom's not happy about it because he's like, you can't inherit this. And she's like, says who? And you kind of
says the guy who inherited a country.
Yeah. Victor. So just kind of goes into her dealing with his death, not kind of really wanting to accept it. And I guess we'll just have to keep reading to find out what happens.
Yeah, no, I'm very intrigued by that. Clea is obviously a character that has been around for most of the Doctor Strange run that I'm
she's
aware
not
of.
A human. She's comes from like a line of like warlords, and she's related to Dormammu. So when she gets all crazy, her whole body like lights up in fire. She's kind of like looks kind of like Captain Marvel when she's going wild.
Yeah. Well, no, I'll definitely check that out. So thank you, Michael, for telling us about that. And speaking of. We were talking a little bit about the artwork being a little bit lackluster in this. Someone who
just for the book, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Not, I know, yeah.
Okay. No,
yeah.
No, just for this book. But speaking of someone who really redefined comic book art over the weekend, Neil Adams passed away. And, you know, I mean, his run on Batman, which we'll talk about quickly for a second. But also, I mean, the original X-Men was canceled fairly unceremoniously before it came back as a new X-Men. But it was going to be canceled much sooner if it hadn't been for Neil Adams. He very much wanted to take – he asked Stan Lee, what's your worst selling book? And he's like, oh, the X-Men, we're going to cancel it in 2 issues. And And so he, you know, it's just some beautiful stuff in there. And he and his family own a comic book store in Burbank where we were talking about that we live.
Which one
Neil,
is it?
Neil
which
Adams, one? Krusty Bunkers. And it's actually very close to where AfterBuzz was. And Neil had been there occasionally. You know, he would do signings. You could commission artwork from him, all that kind of stuff. And so it's like sort of finding out that, you know, your friend's relative died. I won't pretend to know him or anything, but it's like his son worked there all the time. I talked to him countless times. So it's somebody very important to just sort of what comic books look like. And I asked somebody we talked about a number of times in our first episode, I asked my friend Jeff Winstead, who is a comic book artist, and he is one of my go-to DC guys. I asked him, what should we read to just sort of, you know, to spend a moment paying homage to Neil Adams? And without, you know, I texted him, and without hesitation, he said, you should look at Batman 232, which is the first appearance of Ra's al Ghul. And this comic book from the early 70s, I think it might be 1970, it might be 1971. I don't have it in front of me. But it was, I was shocked at how good the artwork was. And maybe it's because I was just reading something that I felt like, you know, wasn't my favorite. But to just look at it, and granted, I was reading it on a screen and not on, you know, old newsprint. But just like how beautiful the characters look for our visual audience, you're just seeing the cover. But I mean, it's Batman is so well defined, Robin and Ra's al Ghul there in the back. It was great to read. I have read almost nothing from this era, especially DC. I've read a lot of Marvel from the 70s, a lot of the Jerry Conway Amazing Spider-Man, really. But I thought it was great to just sort of get this and just sort of, I thought it was a great Batman story. And just sort of like this like ruse of like, well, my daughter's been kidnapped too. And he's like, well, of course I'm the greatest detective alive. So I saw through it right away. It was like, I don't know. It was just a fun Batman story to read in a vacuum. What did you think about the story, Michael? I know that you read it earlier today.
It threw me back to that, the way Batman comics were before the first episode of this show, that arc, the way the Batman comics were before then, where it was campy, it reminds you a little bit of the TV show. You know, you think of the animated series. The artwork is just so great. The way he draws Robin is just, it's like, I don't know if I want to go here. It's just the way he draws him is very kind of sexy, and it's kind of provocative for like their relationship. I don't know. There's something about the way he draws Robin, the way he draws Ra's al Ghul, and that last panel where you see Batman being kissed, that is just a great, great, great shot.
Yeah, I
thoroughly enjoyed.
And Eric sent me something that we're looking at for our video audience is just sort of this, this profile of Ra's al Ghul as he looks around the Himalayas. It's just the kind of detail that I think was so often lacking from comics, even when I was reading. And it's just like, you know, it's just Neil Adams at his best. And it was great to have an excuse to dive into something that I knew that I should have read a lot of this stuff, you know. And Denny O'Neill wrote that story as well. And we lost him recently as well. And this pairing of the two of them, there are some iconic Green Lantern and Flash stories that they did together. So there's really a lot of great work from both of them to find, but a lot of stuff. So Eric, you sent me that image. So clearly that was something that stood out for you, Ra's al Ghul in the Himalayas, right?
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's interesting. You said this was the This was the introduction of Ra's al Ghul, you said, or the first time?
His first appearance. Yeah, his daughter had shown up earlier because
like a few issues before.
And
you know, that's one thing many years ago. I mean, Jim Lee obviously is at every Comic Con, and he did one where he just sat there and he just chatted like he will do and sketched Batman. And I actually just sent you a picture of like kind of a profile shot of Batman panel. And as someone who does not draw at all, I'm always amazed at anyone who can capture an expression or a face or a three-dimensional shape to a human face. And that's one thing I found in here, like looking at Ra's al Ghul's face. I kept noticing like the way his cheekbones were kind of sunken in, you know, and in this here, this panel for the video audience. You know, it just to me is everything Batman in one panel, you know, in terms of his just his look, his face, his eyes. Like, and I mean, the story, you know, it's very 1971. I was not alive during that year. Christian may have been, he changes his age with every episode. But I found like, you know, some of the storytelling, like, oh my god, it's gonna flash back to his parents getting killed again and explain how he became Batman again. Yeah. And even my 11-year-old was kind of mocking. He's like, how many times does Batman's parents get killed? I'm like, a lot, you know, because it obviously changed him. But
it bothers me when we see it so much in movies. But the idea in comics is that comics is that every issue is somebody's first issue, especially in those days where back issues didn't exist. You didn't really collect and reprint. So it didn't bother me in here. But. Yeah, the number of times I've seen it on screen. Yeah,
yeah, and so we're reading it like they're explaining a lot more.
Yeah, it was okay. I didn't mind it, and also getting to see Neil's kind of take on that, I thought was nice to see too.
But I really love the character work here. I thought they, you know, he just did such a wonderful job of capturing, you know, kind of like it's funny the thing we were just talking about that was kind of missing in a lot of those panels in the Strange series. I think you find. In triplicate here, you know, how just one single panel of a character could be as stirring as a wide shot that's an action scene. So I think his skill was apparent in this issue, and I think it's a great one to look at.
And they didn't, you know, use as much color as they do now, and he's just so incredible with such a limited and good precise color palette, the way the greens were used just for the overall entrance of Ra's al Ghul and how it was used in the whole comic book. I just really, really enjoyed.
By the way, one of the last things that I, you know, it was only a couple of years ago. I think Neil's done some things since then, but one of the last things that I know he did was a Fantastic Four series because I think it was called Road Trip. I can look it up, but he's like, somehow I've never drawn the Fantastic Four before. And this is just like 2 years ago, maybe. So he's like, I want to do a series of it. And so the fact that he did, I'm like, oh, I'm so glad that he did that. But so, Kate, did you get a chance to read this Batman issue?
I did. And,
yeah, okay. I know this was sort of a late assignment. I just wanted to make sure before I asked you about it. What did you think? I mean, obviously, we can talk about the story. Denny O'Neill, obviously a cornerstone of so much of the DC universe, you know, up there with Marv Wolfman. But what did you think of this, you know, the artwork, but this story in general, this Batman 232?
I really like this story, and considering that we've in the cinematic universes, we've met these characters all before. I really liked seeing where these characters came from. I'd never read it before, although I had seen the like Ra's al Ghul, like I'd seen the comic book version of him. But I agree with Michael. Like, there's something about going back to. Especially now that we're getting into like, we just read Batman Year One and we've just gotten the Batman and we're getting into like a very like dark superhero tonality, which is fine. And there's a place for it, especially, you know, in our culture right now and what questions we're asking of ourselves and of our heroes. But it's nice to go back to like how it started and like Batman in the middle of him being Batman. So it's like the way that they use the color to signify certain characters. Or even just like comparing it to the color of the comic book we just read, where the color was a lot in the details, but the faces were lacking. Whereas in this one, the faces were doing all of the heavy lifting and like the shadows were accenting. Or I think some of my favorites were like the color, like when they're crawling through a window and it's black, but you just see the white outlines. And that was enough to get like a facial expression and like a tone, like a movement. So it's just like, and that was just black and blue. And he pulled it off, and it was more interesting than some of the like more interesting art that is happening now, to just go backwards and just see where did Batman come from, and why was it so good?
And the observation that it's Batman in the middle of being Batman. It's not, it's not a year one. It's not a Dark Knight.
It's not a Christian Bale start. Yeah. It's not a year two false start. It's Batman being Batman. It's why people liked going to see Val Kilmer and, you know, on all of, you know, those movies, that version of Batman.
Right.
It's like, we want to see him completely confident, a little bit unsure of how to solve the situation, but he's going to do it.
You know, like to have the villain on the first page, like it's like, this person's gonna kill Robin and be in like control when he dies, and then like immediately, like in the next page, is like introduced, like, oh, same thing happened to me. Like, it's like you already know what's gonna happen. Yeah. And that's kind
of, or great. The last page, I had the same thought with Mike, of Michael, when it's like Talia's kissing him on the cheek and his face is just like, what? And it's like, what plans will they have next for Batman? And it's just like, I don't know.
Yeah. No, I know. I'm like, I kind of want to see where it goes. And at some point, maybe I'll pick that up. And the Neil Adams Fantastic Four story I referenced is actually called Antithesis. I was thinking of a different series. One thing I want to talk about before, we're going to give some quick personal recommendations. But Kate, I know that you mentioned that Dark Crisis is coming. Well, and there's this is artwork from Michael.
So
Michael, thank you for sharing.
That's
this.
The variant I ordered.
Yeah, of course, because Michael doesn't buy the standard covers.
Sometimes. Michael Shirley, all variants all the time.
So this Saturday, May the 7th, is Free Comic Book Day, and you can very easily just find out your local participating comic book shops. I tried to take my kids this past Saturday, not realizing it was next Saturday, so we'll go back. It'll be fun. But
it's a dress rehearsal, Christian.
Yeah, exactly. And now we
know
where to go.
Daddy, why do you lie? You lie to us every weekend about something. Why?
There's just not enough time. There's just not enough time to explain. But Kate, so I know you're excited about this. There are some free comic book giveaways for Dark Crisis.
Yes.
So just take a moment and tell us why this was so interesting to you.
I like the idea that like we're just gonna kill the Justice League, and I'm just like, really?
No.
That's intriguing.
After I saw the Joss Whedon cut of that movie, I wanted to kill the Justice League. But
and it's coming out soon, so I just wanted to throw that out there in case there was a free comic book thing.
Well,
but if you're going to Free Comic Book Day, is this the time for recommendations?
Yeah, this is a fine time for a recommendation. Is that your recommendation, or do you have another one?
No, I have another one.
Okay, do you have it to hold up for us?
I do.
Okay, great.
I do. I recommend this one. Because they just restarted Saga, and I love this comic book. It is such a cool, the art is really, really beautiful and interesting. There's a lot, and it's kind of like well spaced. It's not like too crowded. It's kind of like a Romeo and Juliet story where it's like two opposite kind of it's from a Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples. And it's two monsters or aliens trying to find their place and a place that doesn't accept them. So they have a young child, they have a family, and they're trying to find a place that will accept them, basically.
Right. That is Kate's recommendation, something very current.
Here's my other one.
I didn't even know you had
two. I recommend this one as well. It is called Sex Criminals.
Oh, by Matt Fraction. Okay.
By Matt Fraction.
Oh, and Kip Zdarsky. Yeah, I see them both on there. Okay.
I highly recommend this. I think you would really like this, Michael.
What is it about?
Because it's about two people that can stop time while they have sex. And of course, what do they do with that time? They rob banks.
Oh, well, that's fair.
I have a lot of physical questions about
that. Wait, yeah.
So like, good.
Do they have to have sex while robbing the bank?
Yeah, that was my thought.
No, okay. I thought so too. And then it gets
and just like that, I was a millionaire.
Like that, It's so weird. Well, and I was just
it
like,
sounds weird. I think that we might have to revisit that on the book club.
It's so enjoyable.
So that's some current stuff. My recommendation is something that I recommend all the time to people. I feel almost a little embarrassed. It seems pedestrian, but it is the greatest X-Men story ever written.
Okay, I've never read that book.
It is, if you read Marvel Graphic Novel number 5, God Loves, Man Kills. They also just did a special edition a couple years ago with new material, which Michael and I spoke with Chris Claremont about on our show, Marvel Movie Talk. But if you've never read an X-Men comic book and you need to read one, it's this one. It explains everything. X-Men 2, the best of the X-Men movies, is largely based on this. It's an adaptation. It's not a literal telling of it, but that is kind of there's really two that I always recommend to people, and that is my personal number one. And I made fun of Eric because his recommendation was about as pedestrian as mine, but it is also something that I love, and in an indirect way. Marvel Superheroes Secret Wars, the first big Marvel crossover. Okay. The way that I got to be friends with my friend Jeff Winstead is that I just had an offhand Facebook post about how much cooler Secret Wars is than Crisis on Infinite Earths, but I had to concede that I never read Crisis on Infinite Earths. So he sent me a trade paperback. And then I sent him Kitty Pryde and Wolverine, the 6-issue series. And that's kind of the idea for this show, is reading something that you never read before that you should have. But Eric, your pick, Marvel Superhero Secret Wars. What was it about it, other than the fact that you get everybody except Doctor Strange and Daredevil in this book?
Yeah, I think for me, too, it's like, I got to admit, okay, so when you put up this assignment test, part of me is like, okay, what's going to result in the least mockery from Michael Shirley? And so I was thinking, okay, well, I got American Splendor on the shelf behind me. I got Ghost World. I got all these kind of cool hipstery, you know, graphic novels that I think are terrific. But then I was like, you know what, though? This is one that a 10-year-old me was floored by. You know, it was like one of the biggest fights I ever had with my parents up until that point was hawking them, as we say in Yiddish, meaning like bothering them until I got number 12, to the point where they said, we're not buying it for you. And I was like, oh, and I cried.
But it was double-sized.
And it has
Victor Von Doom with his healed face on the cover. I can visualize right. it. That was important.
And this, I mean, I even unearthed my copy, first appearance of the Black Spider-Man costume.
You needed to tell me that you were going to hold that up. Because the only book that I have graded and slabbed by CGC is my Secret Wars number 8, triple signed also. Oh. So,
well, mine was in a box with a bunch of other stuff in Delaware.
Well, mine was in a box
years.
Before I sent it off to be pressed and graded by CGC. So now I have to show it.
Day, Christian, come on.
Yeah, well, it's upstairs. We literally don't have time.
Well, wait, we got nothing, Barrett. It's cool.
No, the show's that we're already into golden time, and you know how expensive that can get. So Secret Wars, it's everybody fighting. I mean, issue 4, that picture of the Hulk holding up the mountain. We sort of got a little bit of a recreation of that in Endgame, which was great. It was some great fan service.
I remember.
So
there was one
just
I
in a nutshell, what was it? Go ahead, Eric. What were you saying?
You know, sorry. I remember there's one panel of Cyclops like wiping out all of them.
Yep.
And like the idea of how wide can his laser blast go, which I was like, oh, my God, like it could take out everyone. You know, I think it was something about the. You know, that kind of epic event that we all would create as kids. You know, right. We would get the toys and we'd always like have people team up. And so all of a sudden the comic book's doing something as epic as our imagination. And then now, you know, being around long enough that Marvel Cinematic Universe has managed to pull that off too. You know, when you look at something like Avengers Endgame and watching my son literally bounce up and down in his chair during the moment when everyone, you know, when the Avengers truly assembled, I mean, in essence, it was, you know, circle of life shit. I could sing Sunrise Sunset for you. But you'll have to pay extra, Geekscape audience. but that to me was me reading this, you know, as a kid,
yeah.
long before the stuff really successfully translated to the screen, with a few exceptions. And yeah. so, yeah, this was the epic event.
Yeah,
that,
no, it's,
you know, you needed.
I am more excited about Secret Wars, but having read Crisis and just in awe of the detail that George Perez put into every panel, there's no skipping. You know, there's so many characters that he drew in, you know, the significance of Crisis for DC going forward, I understand was more important, but as a kid, boy, I sure loved me some Secret Wars. And Secret Wars 2 was the most disappointing sequel in my life until I got Star Trek Picard season 2, but that's a story for another show. Michael, what is your recommendation? I know we were talking before, but I'm getting older and I've forgotten already.
Yeah. I was kind of trying to stay on topic, so yeah. I picked Strange Number 1.
Oh, so Strange Number 1 was your pick. Yeah. Great. Okay, perfect. I appreciate that.
Which
well,
is beautiful. I'm going to read that, actually.
I'm very excited about that. Well, as we wind down, I wanted to let everybody know that we will be back in a month. We do this show monthly so that everybody gets a chance to read our next book. So sometime in the evening on June 5th, I believe, we will be back. And to tie into something that we're all talking about over on our other show, I'm very interested in Moon Knight Lunatic.
Oh, no.
And I know that Michael is very excited about it. But, I mean, if you're watching the video, you see this visual of the first issue. I was probably going to go with a different Moon Knight run. And then as the series on Disney Plus progressed, I was like, well, clearly we got to go with that one. So we'll be reading Moon Knight Lunatic, which is collected in a graphic novel or in a trade paperback, or you can, of course, get it digitally. If you get the free trial of either Comixology or Marvel Unlimited, you can usually get it for like a week, so you can read all of it. So that is what we will have next time.
Also, and, if you have a library card, Hoopla will probably have it as well, or your local library.
I love that. That's some great insight. I didn't even know. I didn't know what was with all the Hoopla, but I appreciate the explanation.
Yeah, Hoopla is the kind of library, digital library.
I haven't gotten it to work with my library card. I don't know if my library is involved in that program.
What's funny is that's how I read Way of the Weird, because they have a comic book of the month club, and this is their pick for the month. It was Way of the Weird.
Well, also, your library card, Michael, that might not be considered a library by others.
Yeah, well...
I don't know where you're going with that, but you can tell me.
He's going the adult bookstore route.
Really look like someone that would go to an adult bookstore?
Yeah,
and
no,
hang
out? He just gets it all online. In any case, we appreciate everybody who got this show online. Thank you for joining us, whether you watched live or you're listening to the archive version. And please join us next month for Moon Knight Lunatic. As always, I'm Christian Blatt. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ChristianDMZ. And if you enjoyed these four voices, you can hear these four voices along with our friend Jeff Williams Jr. most weeks, Wednesdays at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. If you have been keeping up on Moon Knight, we'll be doing the season or series. We'll find out the season finale of Moon Knight on Wednesday. So please join us for that. Michael, where can people find you?
Yeah, you guys can find me on Instagram at Hey Michael Shirley and on Twitter at Michael X Shirley. And if you want more than four voices, you can check out Eric's movie, Other Voices, on Amazon. Not Tubi.
Eric, thank you for joining us this week. We appreciate
it.
Apart from Other Voices and your Tubi, where else can people find you, Eric?
Come by and say hi. Oh, hello, Michael's kitty. How you doing?
You didn't want to miss the outro, I guess.
Yeah.
See, it totally outdid my dog. My dog was just in the shadows. Yeah. But I am not in the shadows. You can find me at Count Eric Connor on Twitter and Instagram.
And Kate, where can people find you?
Sorry, I'm still on the cat.
He's a real show-off like me.
That's
that
purely white cat is a very Moon Knight Lunatic sort of a
with a little jangle of the bell. Yeah. And every, oh, Michael,
gotta keep track.
You can find me at Cornellable
At Cornellable.
At Cornellable on TikTok, Instagram, and that's it, because I don't do Twitter.
Michael, are you on TikTok? Because
I signed up for it. Okay. Right now, this is the fullest extent I'm ready for people to have real me.
Okay,
like, I'm not ready to transition.
Look, as someone who gets texts from you, and I don't just mean movie spoilers, I don't think people are ready. People are not ready for the real you. I think that this Michael is perfect. You got 69 minutes of Michael, which I think is perfect. In any case, we will see everybody next month. Thank you. Thank you to Matt Kelly and, of course, Jonathan London and everybody over at Geekscape. We'll be back next week. And keep reading. We'll see you next time. Next month.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.